Welcome again to the Business of Kush, the cannabis business podcast, where your host, Chip Schweiger, the Greenleaf CPA, and his guests talk about all the business side of the cannabis industry, including accounting, finance, investing, and news of the day. If you're a cannabis business owner, investor, or industry insider looking for the dopest tips to make more money, improve profits, and increase the value of your cannabis business, you're in the right place. And now, here's your host, Chip Schweiger.
Well, hi there, and welcome again to this week's episode of the Business of Kush podcast. If you're a new listener, a hearty welcome to what we think is quickly becoming one of the best business podcasts for cannabis entrepreneurs. And if you're a regular listener and subscriber, thanks for joining us again this week. Really appreciate it and happy that you're here. So I'm Chip Schweiger, the Greenleaf CPA, and a 27-year veteran of public accounting and corporate finance, and also the founder and managing member of a CPA firm that helps marijuana, hemp, and CBD businesses stay on the right side of tax, accounting, and compliance rules so that you can focus on growth. And because we're a firm that solely caters to the complex compliance needs of the cannabis community, we certainly understand the unique challenges you're facing. Hey, just a quick favor to ask before we get started with this week. If you could leave a review on Apple Podcasts or hit the bell icon on Spotify, that would be a big help to get this podcast to more cannabis business owners. Now, I've included a link in the show notes that explains how to do this. And thank you in advance for being so awesome and for helping out. Okay, so this week, I want to talk specifically to the cannabis CEOs. Now, if you're an investor or an aspiring cannabis business owner or an industry insider, that's okay. You're going to get a ton of value out of this episode, so keep listening. But if you're a CEO, I want you to lean in a little bit closer to hear me or turn up the volume in your car just a bit more, because this week we're talking about the three things successful cannabis business owners do differently than the rest of us. You know, much is made of analyzing the personality traits of successful entrepreneurs. Some appear outgoing, others are introverts. Some lean politically right, others lean left. Some are flashy, others are more monk-like with their money. Their diversity can lead one to the conclusion that there are no common personality traits among successful founders. But rather than trying to understand who they are, let's look at what they do. So at my firm and in my career, I've had the opportunity to help many businesses improve their value, with some going on to exit their businesses for 7, 8, or even 9 figures. And as such, we have a unique vantage point from which to observe the owners who achieve the most successful financial success. And this point of view has allowed us to observe three things that most successful owners do differently. Number one, they read business books. So my most successful clients are voracious consumers of business content. When a new business book hits the bestseller list, most have either read it already or have already summarized its central point. They read about the cannabis industry. They read about mainstream industries. They understand what's going on socially, and they're always keeping up with politics. And let's be honest, there's a lot of hopeful talk in our industry about what's happening in Washington with federal reform, and in states as more of them come online. So there's a lot to keep up with. And it's not just the printed word. Many of them get information through audiobooks or webinars or podcasts. And hey, by the way, congratulations for listening to this podcast, while others get information via YouTube. And really, the actual medium is less important to these successful founders. What's consistent is their continuous learning pattern and their desire to leverage other people's smart ideas and to put those smart ideas to work in their own cannabis company. All right, number two, in the absence of having a board or directors or boss, they join mastermind groups. And what these successful founders have found is that they can use these peer groups to hold themselves accountable and to gain an outside perspective when they're stuck. So initially popularized by Napoleon Hill in his book, Think and Grow Rich, a mastermind gathers a small group of peers to act as one's board. Now, often led by a chair, These groups become lifelines for owners as they navigate big decisions in their businesses and in their personal lives. Now, you may already have a number of investors in your cannabis business, and they may function as a sort of sounding board. But if you're like a lot of cannabis business owners, those relationships are important for you to look good and to leave investors with the impression that you're as on top of the business and are protecting their investments as much as you really are. So you're likely to be a little bit guarded with what you say and how you say it. And even if that's not your concern, look, mastermind groups can provide incredible value to you because they're a safe environment to explore the challenges of starting and running your cannabis business. Things that you can't bounce off of employees or a spouse or an investor, you can share in a mastermind group and get real solutions to real challenges you're facing. And the number three thing that successful business entrepreneurs do is they ask questions. Now, the character trait that makes successful entrepreneurs inclined to read business books and join peer groups is their natural curiosity. They have an unquenchable thirst for knowledge. No matter how successful, they never get full. Now, the case in point is Burner, who built a $500 million cannabis empire in cookies because the guy never stops. He's always asking questions and always trying to learn more. He's working on 3 to 4 hours sleep a night. Burner is constantly going and gathering information, knowledge, and data. Now, we don't work with them. Hey, Burner, if you're listening, just give me a call, bud. But I've been charting his trajectory for a while now, and I'm telling you, he's figured it out. And on a side note, looking forward to his full recovery from the medical issues that he's been publicly going through right now. Get well soon, boss. But back to you. Yes, you should regularly be asking questions about your finances from your bookkeeper or accountant. But also, you can ask questions of customer managers or of growers under the canopy or even of customers. Because every interaction with everyone you meet, both inside your company and out in real life, every one of these interactions gives you information and data. Hey, even talking to competitors can make a ton of good information. If they're expanding into new products or perhaps a product line didn't work out, all of that is good information. And having good relationships with your competitors also makes sense because you never know when they might be interested in buying your company or you interested in buying theirs, right? Hopefully that makes sense. So you may be sitting there listening and be a little surprised that we didn't talk about the stereotypical attributes of successful entrepreneurs. Yes, many founders are also action-oriented and competitive and tenacious and all of that. But all of those common personality traits are who they are, and our interest is what they do. Actions are a measure of a person. Take a look at what a founder does to stay sharp, and you'll see a consistent pattern among the most successful entrepreneurs you know. And do these things, and you can be right there with them, regardless of how you measure success. Well, before we finish this week, one last thing, and you know what it is. It's a segment we call News of the Day.
News of the Day.
All right. We've actually got several news items to talk about today. And the first one is really pretty shocking breaking news, actually. So Pennsylvania orders the targeted vaporized products, upends the cannabis market. So in an unprecedented move, Pennsylvania medical marijuana regulators are ordering every licensed grower and processor to resubmit vaporized cannabis products that contain additives for another approval. Now, this is a move that experts fear could cause serious product disruptions and financial losses. And the product reapprovals detailing each ingredient must be submitted to state regulators by November 30th, according to a recent email from Sonny Podolak, who is the state's health department's chief compliance officer. And the email even warns that disciplinary action, including possible license suspension or revocation, could occur if a licensed grower or processor doesn't comply with the request and continues to sell vape products after that date. And this is, this has certainly got the industry, especially in Pennsylvania, upended right now. There is a quote from a cannabis attorney, Judith Cassell, who characterized the request really as onerous and arbitrary. She said, quote, "This could mean millions of dollars of inhalation products previously approved could now be required to be destroyed. So stay tuned for this. More to come on that one. All right, let's see. The second one is really a story about how competition is heating up amongst providers of marijuana point of sale systems. So we call them POS systems. So more companies, this is from also from MJ Biz Daily, more companies have entered the marijuana point of sale market in 2021 than in previous years, setting up the possibility of downward price pressures in the POS sector and consolidation amongst businesses that provide software to retailers. So while new entries face a highly concentrated market, POS is quickly becoming an important part of the so-called software stack that cannabis retailers use to handle a range of services such as e-commerce and delivery. And really that software stack is the POS system and some sort of accounting package, as well as some sort of retail management system. Now, this demand for bundled software services is driving cannabis tech companies such as Dutchy to snap up point-of-sale providers. And really, the sector has grown from 79 vendors in 2021, which is up 16% from the previous year and 75% from 2018, when Cannabis Media, which is a Connecticut-based cannabis license database and marketing platform, started tracking the category. So I mention this only because we continue to see, I think, our industry start to fill up. Point of sale vendors, which are in mainstream retail industries all over the place, are really starting to crop up, and there's more and more of them in our industry. And that's probably a good thing to see for consumers, and it's also a good thing, I think, to see for cannabis businesses, especially dispensaries, because getting all that information out of the point of sale system is super, super important. Okay, and the next article, actually, we just talked about this in our podcast episode, right? Talking about what successful cannabis entrepreneurs do. Well, they keep an eye on the news and they keep an eye on politics. So our next article talks about the more changes that are likely to LA marijuana licensing, and that topic has become a political hot potato. So in Los Angeles, marijuana licensing and social equity programs might be in for another round of major changes, spurred by a stream of complaints to the city council in that city and regulators by license applicants who have yet to open up their businesses. Also, you've got a lot of finger pointing going on over the program shortfalls that have erupted in recent months, with both the city councilman and the chief of the Department of Cannabis Regulation trading barbs in formal city documents. So, you know, look, I think the situation really reflects how mired in red tape and bureaucracy and delays in the city's licensing process have been for years. And that's even despite major overhauls in the program. But a few industry officials have also indicated that they're now hopeful a boiling point might have been reached and that proposed changes could make the process work easier for the 100 or so social equity retailers that have yet to receive their city licenses. So I think this is a place to obviously keep your eye on what's happening, especially if you do business in Los Angeles. Things are complicated there, and the politics, the intersection of politics and the cannabis businesses is really an interesting and frustrating place to see. All right, and our last article comes from, let's see, Cannabis Business Times. So, and it, what this really talks about is the effect on federal cannabis policy from a state that has one Democrat and one Republican. So in November 2021 Gallup poll, 68% of Americans said they supported legalizing cannabis, while 69% expressed support in an April 2021 poll from Quinnipiac University. Look, anytime you've got almost three quarters of the American public agreeing on something, that's something that needs to happen. But the debate on Capitol Hill continues. So it's a political split on the issue that's perhaps no more evident than in Ohio, where Democratic U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown, who supports federal decriminalization of cannabis, and Republican Senator Rob Portman continues to have concerns about broadly legalizing the plant. And now, as the article says, Ohio is one of the five states that currently has one Republican and one Democrat in the U.S. Senate, the others being Montana, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Wisconsin. And the reason I bring this up is, you know, a lot of us talk about the continued war on drugs, and especially the war on cannabis and how it affects too many Americans, particularly Black and Brown Americans and people of color. And, you know, I think it was $33 billion that the U.S. government spends each year prosecuting the war on drugs. And African Americans are 3.6, almost 3.7 times more likely to be arrested for cannabis-related offenses as compared to whites nationally. So I think this political discord in particular states between Republicans and Democrats really needs to get worked out and find some comfortable road. I'm not picking a fight with either side. I think both of them realize that the reason why they feel the way they do. I just think that, look, there's 3/4 of us in this country that agree on this. I think it's high time that those in Washington get with the program. And there you have it for this week's episode. Hey, just a reminder that if you have specific questions, please drop us a note at thegreenleafcpa.com/listen. There's a form there for you to submit questions, or you can do it on social media with the hashtag BizOfKush, and I and my guests will give you our thoughts live in future episodes. And also, just one more reminder, if you're enjoying these episodes and getting value, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or hit the bell icon on Spotify. And with that, we're done for this week. Hope you have a very happy Thanksgiving and that you'll join us again next week. We'll see you.
You've been listening to The Business of Kush, the podcast for cannabis business owners, investors, and industry insiders. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to this podcast. It's easy to do by clicking on that subscribe button or follow button. And you can also follow us on social media at BizOfKush or visit us on the web at www.thegreenleafcpa.com/listen. We'll catch you in the next episode. And thanks again for listening to The Business of Kush.